please make it loud for Josh Johnson!
I've struggled with an idea for a while, and it's how, like, everybody... This sounds so dumb. Just hold on. Give me a second. But it is crazy that everybody is a person. What I mean by that is when you're like a little kid and you're just living your life, you know, you go to school and then you go home and then sometimes you play with your friends and sometimes you stay in and you watch cartoons. You know that you have a life. You know that you're a whole person, even if you don't have a full awareness of yourself. You know that you go to different places and you do different things. Even when you have a new experience, it doesn't even occur to you to be like, oh no, I don't do that. Because you're a kid just experiencing the world. But there are boxes that we put people in. I think it's completely unintentional. I don't think there's any malice behind it. But I remember the first time that I realized that someone who I definitely cared about and I definitely enjoyed their company and I definitely liked was a whole other person. I was a little kid. I was with my mom at the grocery store and we saw my teacher. And I was shocked. I was shocked. I was like, I said it out loud. I said it to her. Why aren't you at school? If you're here, then who's? It was a crazy thing in my head. My brain was breaking in that moment. I'm this little kid. I've only ever seen her at school. She's supposed to be at school. I shouldn't see her if I'm not at school. And she's over here buying groceries. I was like, you eat groceries? This is wild. And then she was over here having a conversation with my mom. They both ignored me asking why she wasn't at school. I still had questions. And then she, you know, said she'd see us on Monday and walked away. And in my head, I was like, Monday? It's Saturday. She's not even gonna be at school tomorrow. Blew my mind that one of my favorite teachers had like a house. And like, I'd always heard about her husband, but I thought that's just something teachers say to like pass the time and stuff. She had a whole life. It feels like a silly lesson to learn when you're a kid, and then you get older and you realize you have to keep relearning it over and over again, because you meet more and more people and you've already boxed them in. And then they surprise you. And then you think, oh, I'm a little ashamed I was even surprised. I should know from when I was like 6 that people are like, everybody's a person. But it's an easy lesson to forget because you can only sometimes see a person in a certain way, you know? Like my friend, I have a couple friends now who they've got drunk with their parents, you know? And it's a boundary that some people never break with their parents. Sometimes their parents are like, oh, you know, I'm going to have a couple drinks, but I'm not going to be drunk in front of my son. You know what I mean? And then they're people who will always have that thing of like, oh, I don't want to be drunk in front of my parent. You know what I mean? It's like weird. I feel like I'd be in trouble. It's like, well, you're 42. Yeah, but still. I don't know. I don't want my mom to see me drunk. It's like, well, she saw you at your worst as a baby. I guarantee you drunk just brings you like one step above baby. But it was an interesting thing. My friend said that he, you know, he had a couple drinks with his dad. Now, his dad was a sort of interesting case because when he was a kid, I don't know all the details, but his dad drank. And then there was something, whether it was something that happened or just like a general attitude towards drinking. At one point, his dad was like, you know what? I'm just not going to drink anymore. And he went like cold turkey sober for years and years and years, right? So he drank pretty heavily when my buddy was a kid, didn't drink until he was long out of the house. And it wasn't until after my buddy graduated college that his dad would like drink once in a while, you know, have a drink with him. And finally, one day, his dad was like drunk with him. And he noticed his dad like drunk. And he was like, it's crazy because I know my dad used to drink. And I can only see my dad as my dad. So knowing my dad is like an annoying drunk. I don't know. I guess I forgot he could be a whole person. Like, because his dad had this weird like rivalry with him when he was drunk. He, you know, walk up to him, impromptu, off of nothing. They're in the backyard. And he's like, hey. You know, looking good, young man. Looking strong, looking tough. I mean, you looking real strong. You know, what? You think you're stronger than me? What? I mean, no. Do you think he's stronger than me? We should race. You want to race? And he knows that a foot race with his dad sober wouldn't even be a contest. So he's like, nah, dad, I'm good. He's like, no, come on. You know, if you're scared, say so. If you're scared, say so. If you're scared, the old man still got it. If you're scared, say so. Said he made it into one of the most annoying songs he had ever heard in his life. Just until he would raise him, if you scared, say so. And finally, he's like, all right, look, we'll race, fine. And he thinks if he stands up, his dad might just forget, you know, because he's at that level of drunk where he's on a mission, but not a mission he has to complete. Y'all know that mission. This is one of my favorite missions to watch people have on like a night out, you know, especially with like, but one of my favorite side quests in any night out that a bunch of ladies are having is finding one of their phones. One phone will go missing and it will be the biggest deal in the world for 12 minutes. And then the person whose phone is missing will be like, let's just dance. It's like, all right, but you should go get your phone, though. Like, you do need to call an Uber at some point and get home. Like, we need your phone. It's like, yeah, but, like, later. Like, I don't know. It's just like, I don't even care. It's like, this is my song. And then it resets because then, like, several songs later, it'll be like, yeah, you look so good. I'm going to take a picture of you. I'm going to. Oh my God, everybody stop. Not their friends, everybody in the club stop. Everybody stop. And so this dude stands up thinking like his dad's about to be over it anyway. And he's like, dad, I really don't want to, like, we're having a good time. Like, let's just chill out. And his dad goes, no. Race me. He's like, all right, fine, okay. So they line up. He's not really going to race his dad. He's going to, like, walk and let his dad win so he can feel good about being annoying for 15 minutes. But his dad stands up and he's ready. You ever see somebody look at a finish line like it's moving? Just like, said, he said, all right, you ready? And they had already decided that his mom would say when to go. And so she said, go. And my buddy didn't even go. His dad took 3 steps and crashed into the patio table. And I don't know, yeah, it's gotta be tough. That's a moment that's like tough. You just know that now. You know your dad your whole life, and then now you're like, oh yeah, but like after the 5th Jameson, he will. You know. And that changes how you look at your dad a little bit, not even in the form of judgment, just like there's more information, and you see him as like a whole person. You know good, you know bad, you know arguing with him, you know, and now you know this thing that you didn't really experience in the same way when you were a kid. Now you know, even 4 Jamesons in, he's gonna go, no. Oh. Like I don't know if it's possible to remind yourself every time, every day, that a person is like a whole person. Because we are so, we are like so distant. Person to person. Like when you meet someone that you've maybe heard about, you can only go off your impression. That impression is colored by whoever told you about this person. And it's hard to remember. I try to remind myself all the time that like, we're meeting this person. Nothing nice has been said. But I'm sure they have a dog. I don't know. Like some redeeming quality. You try to approach it like that. And, you know, I fail at it a lot. You know, sometimes I let, whether it's gossip or just like a preconceived notion, take over. And then you end up being friends with this person. And you feel even worse because you're like, ooh, I judged you so harshly when we met. You know, some of my best friends, when I met them, hated their guts. I hated it because I was just like, oh, just look at his face. One of my best friends from college, when we met, us meeting was me asking him for a pencil. And him going, what? And so I just turned back around. I was like, all right, jerk. Turns out he just didn't hear me. We're like really good friends now. But yeah, that was not a great way to start. One of my best friends, we had that same thing. So he's a big dude. He's like 6'4", 6'5". Like a strong guy, wide guy, right? Big dude. And we were both friends with a different guy. This is freshman year of college. And we had both done things in front of each other that made us go like, I don't know if I like that guy. Like, I like our mutual friend, but I don't know if I like him. And then we kept being in scenarios where maybe we were waiting for our mutual friends and we were left alone with each other. And in my head, maybe it's because of where I come from, and maybe it's because I've never been the biggest guy in the room, but this is a big old dude, and he doesn't seem like he liked me. So in my head, I was like, I just gotta act crazy. Like, if I'm crazy, that'll keep at bay his size. Because even a big man doesn't want to get bit. You know what I mean? I don't care how big or strong you are. Once everybody saw what Mike Tyson did to Evander Holyfield, they were like, oh, yeah, crazy wins. Crazy will always win. I like my whole ear where it is. And then he noticed me being crazy. And so he was like, all right, I'm gonna have to flex how big I am. There was one time where we were waiting on our mutual friend because, forgot to mention earlier, our mutual friend was his roommate. So I had to be in their room a bunch before we actually got along. And I don't know. I saw him like eyeing me, and it's a college dorm room. So there's not a lot of space. So I'm like, this big guy's eyeing me. We're both waiting for our friend. So then I didn't know what to do. So I just started singing lyrics to Kanye West's 808 and a Heartbreak. No music. Impromptu. And lyrics I chose were, when I grab your neck, I touch your soul. I just sang it to the wall, but loud enough for him to hear me. And I would later find out that when I did that, he was like, all right, that's one of the craziest things I've ever seen. In my entire life, I was trying to mug this dude into submission, but now he insane to the wall, not even facing anything. I don't know what he's talking about. Why'd he sing it, too? That's crazy. That's crazy as hell. It's so much crazier to sing than it is to scream. Like, when you, if you come across somebody on the street and they scream it, you're like, all right, that's regular. If they are singing lyrics you don't know exist yet, because the album had just come out, if they're singing lyrics you don't know exist yet, get away. And so he was like, I gotta do something. I've got to do something. And the thing that he decided to do was we both got a text from our mutual friend that it would be quicker for us to meet him where he was than wait for him to come back and us head out together. And so we decided to head out together. And while I'm in the hallway, it's a long hallway from the dorm room to the end of the suite. And when I'm in the hallway, I go, ah. And he says, what? And I'm like, I think a mosquito bit me. And I was being completely sincere in this moment. I started itching. I was like, ah, what? And he's like, what happened? I think a mosquito bit me. And then he stands extra tall, every bit of 6'5", lets his eyes dart around the hallway and goes, you hurt my friend! And then he punched the wall as hard as he could. And when he moved his fist from the wall, there was a dead mosquito. And I was like, oh Lord, he big and crazy. Oh, I'm sick. Oh. And then we became best friends. We became best friends because we got to know each other. We got to know each other, and I got to know him as a whole person. I got to know how cool he was, how sincere he is, that he would do anything for his friends, including that mosquito thing. And he got to know me, and he still liked me. So we became best friends because I got to see like the whole person, you know? And then finally one day I told him about it. I was like, hey, you know, freshman year, because when we were juniors, we became roommates. And I told him, like, hey, I just want to get something off my chest. Freshman year, when I was in the room with you and I just started singing. I was just trying to be crazy because I thought like you were real big and like, I don't know, I had been bullied a lot. So I was just trying to like keep you at bay. And he was like, oh, that's so good to know. Which means in the time that we had become friends, he still thought like, no, that's what he does though. Like that's who he is as a person. I was like, that's so good to know, because honestly, I was wondering what I'd have to do. I thought you were genuinely crazy. And that's why I punched that wall. When I moved my hand, I couldn't believe the mosquito had actually... Wild stuff. Yeah. Cause it's tough sometimes accepting that someone was like a whole person. Cause it is easier. If someone sucks, it's easier to just, you know, lean on exactly what you know, and that's enough for you, and they suck, and that's the end of it. It's not necessary in your mind to get down to the deeper root of the issue about why they might be the way they are. Whatever. They suck, and I'm done talking about them. You know? Like when I think about some of the most powerful people in the world. I think that way all the time. I forget that it's like a whole person because they suck. They suck so much. Like, I do my best to not be closed-minded about people. But the more I learn, the worse it gets. And no person is just one thing. Even monsters. Some monsters that get true crime documentaries made about them. They'll interview the kids. And sometimes the kids will be like, yeah, actually, he was like a super present father and everything. Like, it was kind of crazy. I know he killed all those people, but he came to all my soccer games. Like, it's a lot to process. Well. Like... I don't know what makes a person, I'm not a psychologist, I don't know what makes a person the way that they are. I just have guesses. Sometimes my guesses are good and I get to have a conversation with the person and see that I was kind of close. And then sometimes my guesses are totally off base because I don't have their mind. I can't act like I know why someone is the way that they are. I know for certain, because of the people that I've been around, I know that sometimes when you grow up with real money, real privilege, it can be very difficult unless you are like delusional enough to accept the position you're in as anything more than like the randomness of who is born to who. It's very difficult to feel like you've made or earned anything yourself. If you are just born into billions, you see, that's one of the reasons these people have to like make their mark on the world to prove that they're not just like some accident. Because within those families sometimes, and like, look, I'm not acting like I know billionaires. I know millionaires. And it's a little similar, but at the same time, there are some millionaires that are barely millionaires, so they still acting like they're middle class. Even though they're millionaires, it's actually pretty sad. And then there are people that are like multimillionaires, and I don't even really know that many multimillionaires, but I know those people have at least accepted their position as people with like wealth and privilege, right? I don't know any billionaires. But I do know the people that I am friends with that work with like truly insane net worth individuals have said things like, at a certain amount of money, you just, it's not even money anymore. It's just you moving your will throughout the world. And that is how people with that much money think. And so if you are like a child born into this thing, especially if you don't take to it the way that we imagine people will take to it, because remember, a person is a whole person, but a lot of people will have a kid and have an idea of a child before the child is ever there. And then that idea of a child is exactly what this whole person has to be, or else they're a disappointment, or else they're a failure, right? I had the idea of you before you were ever here. And the idea of you that I had was, we play these sports together. I teach you to do this thing. We go to these things. You love the stuff that I love. Those are the hopes of like every parent. Every parent wants to share the things they love with their kid. And hopefully the kid loves them too. Because as much as you love your sports team, as much as you love your favorite hobby, it'd be so much more enjoyable if the person you love the most loved it too. A lot of people have those hopes. That's common. That's normal. But this thing, this like world of wealth, they have an idea of maybe building a legacy, building an empire. And now whoever comes, whatever this child is, they will be someone who can uphold, build up, maintain the empire that I built. They're not having like a child. They're having a vessel to continue their wealth into the future. And that's got to be difficult to grow up in. Because, yes, you have all this money, you have all this privilege, you have access to all these different things, but there's a person looking at you like you don't even deserve to be here. And then there's everybody else that if you tried to tell them how it felt, they'd be like, oh, I'm sorry I couldn't hear you through all that money. You know? Cry me a river. You ever felt a penny before? And so you see people really trying to exercise out all of this trauma in a way where they still move their will throughout the world. So then we become the collateral damage of them trying to exercise demons because they have the access to change the world the way that they see fit. And that leaves us in a very dangerous position. And I don't know exactly how to fix that, what to do about that, but I do know it presents itself in like little moments. Small moments where you can see, oh, this is like a kid. This is like a hurt kid. You know? Most powerful man in the world. Incredibly rich. Billionaire. But this is a kid. This is a scared kid. This is a hurt kid. This is an angry kid. And I'm not saying that takes away all the damage. All the things that are being created by what this kid is doing. But like, I see you differently now. Like, in theory, I should be scared of you. I should be worried about what your next move is going to be. I should be worried if you're going to send someone to hurt me or my family, because you could do that. You're a very powerful person. But then things happen, and I see you react like a kid. And it's weird to see you as a whole person, you know? Like, I'm not going to... How do I put this? I could tell Trump was hurt by that South Park episode because... because the White House released a statement... There are school shootings where the White House doesn't release a statement. The White House released a statement. They were like, hey, look,
South Park hadn't been relevant for a while now anyway. Nobody even watched. Ain't nobody crying. Nobody hurt. No. Like, I've watched... I watched Trump go to the Fed. He went to the Fed and he was with Jerome Powell. Now, Donald Trump put Jerome Powell in that position, all right? Donald Trump made Jerome Powell Fed chair, right? And now Donald Trump can't stand Jerome Powell and doesn't know who appointed him. And so he goes to the Fed. I guess they're showing him where they make the money, shred the money. I don't know why he needed to go. He goes on a field trip to the Fed. You know, this is a very funny thing about Donald Trump. He has been very rich his entire life, but he still acts like new money. I have expected Trump to see the money being printed in front of him and go. But this dude is, he's at the Fed with Jerome Powell. And look, you can say numbers. You can say numbers in whatever order you want. No, you can say numbers and he can say more numbers. You can say numbers, that's your right to say numbers however you see fit. Whatever numbers you like, you can say them in wait, 4, 3, 3, 4. You can do whatever you want. Numbers are there for you to play with. Numbers serve at your pleasure, right? Say whatever numbers you want in whatever order you want, whenever you want. That will not make it math. And so Trump is talking to the media and he just like throwing out numbers. He's saying numbers, right? He's numbers, good numbers, and some bad numbers. Let's get those bad numbers out of there. Good numbers, more numbers, extra numbers, right? And quickly, almost immediately, Jerome Powell is standing off to the side and he goes, Jerome Powell was shaking his head. You know those people who got like perfect pitch? Jerome Powell was shaking his head like somebody with perfect pitch going to karaoke. Like it's... And look, this is not something that happens often. No, Trump's used to talking, and when he talks, people either nod or they stay quiet. And we saw this in spectacular fashion in like 2020. Because he would stand up there, and then the people next to him, the people behind him, sometimes you catch them being like, huh? Like, they were still trying to process what he said. But then he would just be talking. And sometimes he'd even turn to them, look for some confirmation. What do you think about that? And then they would be like, we'll have to check. I've never had the taste of bleach in my mouth, but... I suppose anything's possible. These experts, these doctors, these people, they weren't doing the thing that they should have been doing, which was... Because he didn't just shake his head. He said it. He said it out loud. No, 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 no.
No. No. No. Maybe we wouldn't be in this position if more people, and I'm not even talking about politicians right now, I mean more people, more people who have to deal with government, had the courage to say, no, no, that's not how medicine works, no, that's not science, no, that's not English, no, no. A simple no is powerful, you know? And so sure enough, Trump hates Jerome Powell. Trump hates Jerome. Oh, he hates Jerome. Oh. Trump hates Jerome. Trump hates Jerome Powell. Like, let Jerome. Trump hates Jerome Powell, so ooh, he hate him so good. Trump hates Jerome Powell so much, he did something he never does. He did something we haven't seen him do. Either time he's been president, he did something I didn't even think he was capable to. Trump hates Jerome Powell so much. Through his teeth, he hate him. He hate him so much that Donald Trump did homework. Because he was saying the numbers, and he was saying the numbers, and he was saying the numbers, he was saying the numbers. And then Jerome Powell went, no, no, no. And even Tim Scott was next to Trump, nodding and saying yes, while he was saying no. Yes, with those big teeth, saying yes, 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 swinging those teeth, yes, yes. But Donald Trump heard Jerome Powell's no, and it was almost like he had practiced this. He was ready. He hates Jerome Powell so much. Ooh, he hates him. Ooh, he hates him. And so he goes, huh? What? No. Oh, well, I have the paper right here. And then Donald Trump pulled out a piece of paper and handed it to Jerome Powell like it was checkmate. I had never seen this man prepared in his life. Usually, when Trump has a chart or a piece of paper, it's because he already has a point he's trying to make, and he's just using that to illustrate. Trump has never had a Trump card. This man pulled out the piece of paper. You could see even Jerome was surprised. He was like, paper? Reading? You saw Jerome. Jerome had to break out the glasses for it. He was like, oh. And because numbers are numbers, because math is at least something that, even if you have bias, even if you have an intention towards an intended goal, the math will still make sense or not make sense. Something will be true or not true, right? And so even Jerome Powell, I'm not saying I know this man, I'm not saying he's infallible, but in this moment I'm thinking, maybe he's even thinking, whoa, what if I'm wrong here? What if there's something I don't know about? The president just pulled a piece of paper out as soon as I started saying no, like he rehearsed this. So he takes the piece of paper, throws the glasses on, and you can see him reading it. You can watch the clip. And he goes, no, 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 this old, no. Not good.